Good morning. Welcome to Focus 580. This is our telephone talk program. My name is David Inge. Glad to have you with us this morning. We're also pleased to have back on the program Dr. Robert Bocek. He's a pediatrician from Christie Clinic in Champaign, and he is with us every month. It's always on a Thursday. If we're on a regular schedule, we're on a Thursday in the first hour. And we do these programs regularly so that you will have an opportunity to call in and ask questions. If it's about your kids, nieces, nephews, grandkids, whatever, the children in your life, that's the idea. And it can be a health sort of issue, can be related to development, behavior, anything that you could think of talking about with a pediatrician. You can do that here on the show, and all you need to do is call us. Here in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. Also, we have that toll-free line. That one's good anywhere you can hear us, and that is 800-222-9455. So one way or another, you can call us. So locally here, 333-WILL, and we do have the toll-free line. So if it would be a long-distance call for you, you can use that number. That's 800-222-9455. Welcome back.
Good morning. It's good to be here. And folks, start calling, because Ed reminded me on the way in that this is a year to the day from when we had hail, tornadoes, and all kinds of other
weather. We had two months where we had big blow-ups that happened Thursday morning before noon, which is it's kind of unusual to have that happen in the morning anyway. And we, unfortunately, we got stuck. You got stuck.
And you and
very
I sat
nice.
Here and...
And filled in between the weather bulletins, yeah. Well, we'll cross our fingers now. There has been some severe weather, maybe some later today. Stay tuned to AM 580. But in the meantime, we'll do our regular show here on with Dr. Bocek. And we'll start in with a caller here on our line number one. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
Yes, Dr. Bocek, I am the mother of a little boy who's just about to turn three, and he has always been at the very bottom of the height chart and below the chart in weight, and his older sister has always been sort of 95th percentile in height,
okay.
So it's always been sort of strange to us that he's so little, and I'm, you know, his pediatrician says he's growing steadily, so she's not concerned about him being so little. But I'm just wondering, what type of interventions are there available for this? When do people consider growth hormone treatments? What ages do they look at that at? And is that something advisable or something to stay away from? Do you need more information, or do you want me to hang up?
No, you may stay on the line if you want, but no, I think I know what I probably need to know already. Number one, growth hormone analysis is very hard to do. You have to challenge them. Number two, in this case, I agree with your pediatrician. If the child's growth velocity is normal, that is usually with children, we expect them to grow 2 inches a year till they hit after the first year of life, we expect them to grow kind of a consistent two to two and a half inches a year until they hit the pubertal growth spurt again. I'm with your pediatrician. I think your child is probably very normal, just small. I guess the other thing is, how was pregnancy? What was birth weight?
Well, I was 42 when he was born.
Okay.
And he was born 2.5 weeks early. And he was 5 pounds, 11 ounces.
Okay, so he was, okay.
You know, and then I breastfed him for a really long time.
And that's great.
Yeah.
But I think probably, did you have pregnancy-associated hypertension or anything like that? Any other complications of pregnancy?
I really didn't have any complications.
Okay.
In fact, my obstetrician early in the pregnancy told me I might be gaining too quickly and kind of advised me to eat less, and I ended up gaining, you know, at the low end with both kids, like 19 pounds.
Okay.
And all of the ultrasounds showed that he was more like 40th percentile, so I was just totally shocked when he came out.
Yeah, birth weight was kind of, and I suspect maybe it had to do with your maternal age, although that's certainly not
really.
It's certainly not something. The placenta didn't implant right, or something happened, and it sounds like, your child was just what we call primordial dwarf, and this is a term we use. Okay, it doesn't mean anything about dwarfism or anything wrong in that, and just kind of got a small start, and is probably going to stay a bit small.
So you mean that would have affected his long-term growth potential?
We think it can.
More than genetics?
We think it can. And I guess the other thing is, yeah, then we bring up genetics. What's your size? What's your husband's size?
Well, I'm 5'6", and my husband is just under 6 feet. We're not short.
Okay, so you're both actually quite average, so we'd expect an average. We'd expect your son to be of average height that way.
So would this have been affected by things I did during the pregnancy, the eating?
No. Don't take the rap. It's not your fault. It's just just sort of something that happened. And
is it related to him being born early?
No. Two and a half weeks early. Actually, he's considered term.
Right.
If they're 38 weeks or more, they're considered term.
Right.
So I think something, and again, there's no reason to suspect any other problems, and I assume his development is perfectly normal.
Yeah, he is. Totally
yeah.
Normal. Smart.
So there's no reason to suspect any other abnormal, because he started out small, there's no reason to suspect that anything happened to the brain or anything like that. And he should be just, I would anticipate, a normal child, but he's just going to be not a basketball player.
So there's no way to catch up from something like that if it's not genetic and was caused by whatever was going on with the placenta?
Yeah, if he were going to catch up by age 3, would have shown catch up already.
Uh-huh.
And he's not. He's just staying at that fifth percentile and just growing along that fifth percentile.
Yeah, that's fifth,
whatever. Puberty, I guess the other question is, were you or Dad late into puberty?
No.
Okay, some of these kids will catch up.
Mm-hmm, at puberty.
The constitutional delays will catch up. They're just due to be late growers.
Constitutional.
Yeah, constitutional, it's sort of genetic that, yeah, usually Mom or Dad were small, maybe late into puberty, and now as adults they're of average height or taller.
Mm-hmm. But in terms of whatever was going on with the placenta, that's something that actually affects his growth throughout life?
It can, yeah. And the feeling is that the fetus has been sort of chronically undernourished, if you will, so it just kind of sort of slows things down and they stay slow.
And is there any place I could get more information on that or statistics about older mothers with that?
I suspect there's probably many sources on the Internet, and I suspect in the library you'd find some. You might call your gynecologist.
Mm-hmm. Primordial dwarfism?
Yeah.
And so what are the treatments available for small children? Because you do hear about people using these growth hormones.
Yeah. Usually what we'll see in the growth hormone deficient child is they tend to be a little bit – usually what happens is they just stop growing.
Oh.
They don't do that 2.5 inches per year. They just stop growing. Same thing with hypothyroidism. They just stop growing.
Mm-hmm.
And they stay kind of chubby looking, mm-hmm. kind of babyish looking. If you will.
Mm-hmm.
And if your child's following
he's
that
real thin. Yeah.
Yeah. but his size is small, or his height is at the fifth percentile, so his weight's about at the you said slightly below the fifth percentile, but it's paralleling it.
Right, exactly.
So we say, this child does not have an endocrinologic problem.
Mm-hmm.
Or probably no ongoing health problem because growth just stops.
So that's when you do these interventions.
Yes, that's when we begin to look.
So this problem you've seen that you think he might be having, you've seen with older mothers?
Anything that can affect any kind of chronic problem during pregnancy.
Yeah, I just didn't have any problems.
Yeah, and I suspect that, yeah, he was 5 pounds. I suspect the placenta was smaller than normal, and it can happen in any age. Say if the placenta implants in the lower part of the uterus where the lining is thinner, the blood transfer, the villi don't form quite right. Yeah, the baby's just kind of chronically poorly nourished.
But why wouldn't
they're healthy?
Genetics help him to catch up when he's out of the womb?
I can't answer that. I can't. I don't know if that's well known. That some babies just start out small and tend to stay small.
And there's no particular age when they catch up.
No.
It could happen any time, or it just could not happen.
It could or could not happen.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But again, there's no reason to suspect. Yeah, you say, okay, poor blood flow didn't nourish the baby well. How much brain damage have we seen? And like you said, we've seen none. His development's perfectly normal.
Totally.
He's a bright child.
Yeah.
And the interesting thing is the brain is well protected. What tends to suffer first is the birth weight of the baby. Secondly, length will be affected, and the brain is from malnutrition in utero. The brain seems to be protected the most.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of a neat system.
At one point, I had like a borderline
blood sugar
problem.
Okay.
And she did a bunch of tests, and then I stopped eating sugar completely and didn't have a problem after.
Yeah. Usually, and it's probably not that you malnourished yourself, because baby or fetuses are great parasites. Mom will suffer greatly before baby will suffer.
Uh-huh. Yeah, and I'm a good eater. You know, I would never undereat. I just thought maybe I should have piled it on more.
No, don't. No, this is 99% odds, not your fault. Don't take the blame for it.
Yeah.
Don't beat yourself up over it.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you.
You're welcome.
Thanks for the call. Our guest this morning here on Focus 580 in this first hour of the show is Dr. Robert Bocek. He's a pediatrician from Christie Clinic, and he is on the program every month, always on a Thursday, so that you'll have a regular opportunity to talk about your children and your health concerns. 333-9455 is the number to call for people who are here in Champaign-Urbana. We also have a toll-free line, good anywhere that you can hear us, 800-222-9455. Next caller is in Champaign on line 2. Hello.
Hi. I have more of a comment, really, not a question.
And mm-hmm.
As American, I think mostly Americans do this more than other countries, but as new parents, we get obsessed with the dimensions of our child, weight, height.
Bigger car, bigger house, bigger child.
Exactly. Where he or she is on the growth charts. And, you know, we had a small, well, I guess according to the charts, our boy was small. He was off the charts for months, like off the bottom. And, you know, he's developmentally was ahead of a lot of his peers.
Mm-hmm.
And I think what a lot of people don't know is those charts, they're not that accurate. I mean, they're just a sort of, they're not even normed on the same group of children over time. And they don't take into account breastfed babies at all. They're all on formula. So they're not, you know, a lot of parents are saying, oh, my God, my child's in the fifth percentile. You know, his head's too small, this and that. Yeah. You know, this is a crapshoot, really. I mean, if you take birth weight, I was born at 21 inches and 6 pounds, 12 ounces, and I'm 5'10", 160 pounds, and there's a kid in Wisconsin who's 7'1", 320, on him Baby Shack, and he had the same birth dimensions as I did.
What's the fifth percentile mean? Means 5% of the population is that size or smaller, 95% or bigger.
Right. I mean, but at birth, that's really kind of meaningless. Unless, as you said to the woman, I think she's getting worried that she didn't nourish the baby enough now.
Yeah.
There's no evidence of that, but people are so obsessed with this stuff. But according to my pediatrician, these charts were done years ago and haven't been updated, and never took into account the breastfeeding, which now most pediatricians are a huge proponents of for 1 if not 2 years of life.
Yeah.
Breastfed babies tend to be, I think, if I'm remembering correctly, a little bit smaller early on.
Yeah, they tend to take longer to double their birth weight.
And people just, you know, because we as Americans are a taller society than the rest of the world, we figure that all of our kids should be 6'2", 200 by the time that they're 18 or 5'8", and for women. It's just the world is—it's not the world standard is way, way below that.
Yeah.
We just get obsessed with this, and it's not going to happen for all of us. Some of us will, some of us will catch up, some of us won't. So I just—I don't know if you know about those charts, but I think a lot of parents would be more reassured if the pediatricians told them, "Look, here's the growth chart, but it's not a hard and fast rule that if your child doesn't show up in the 50%, he's not going to be average or above average or below average."
Yeah, it just has to do with size. It doesn't have to do with anything important.
Well, not
like
yet,
development in that.
But, I mean, this isn't any sort of prediction of how they're going to be as adults. My brother would have been, if we'd used the chart, I don't know if my parents did, he was the smallest kid in his class his whole life. And in puberty, he grew like 8 inches in one.
Yeah.
You know, and the same happened to other people I know. They just sprout up. There's just, you can't look at the chart and say, this is it. He's going to be 5'5 and never going to get a girlfriend. You know, I mean, it's not going to work that way.
Yeah, we can do it with a certain, you know, and I do it sort of, you know, hey, this is what I predict, but this is a prediction. You know, this is a fortune-telling thing. This is not written in stone or anything like that. And I think we do have a new growth chart that came out this year.
Oh, okay. Well, I haven't seen
it. Although it looks not greatly different from the old growth chart. And I think that's the other reason why you shouldn't have regular health care visits other than immunizations to see how this child's growing. And you're right, birth weight and birth length predict nothing at all. As they go on and you look at their growth pattern, you can come up with a fair prediction of what adult height's going to be. But you're right, there are these exceptions, the late growers in that.
Right, and genetics, people forget about that.
That's right.
The doctor's telling her that the kid's growing fine.
Yeah.
I think on one level, she's still worried that he's so small, because I'm sure her friends are telling her, oh, you know, Johnny's 95th percentile for height, and, you know, he's 96th percentile for weight, and blah, blah, blah. And she's like, well, my son's five. And I can't find
yeah.
him. But I don't know. I just think that people obsess about it.
And I think you're right. And I think the other thing is that growth data at any – well, okay, if I see this child and I don't know his previous growth rate, I might get upset and want to do some evaluation. And I think that's where, you know, regular growth measurements are important. If they're growing at the fifth percentile, you say, hey, that's, you know, that's where their internal or genetics or something's telling them to grow. We can't do anything about it.
All right. Well, thanks very much.
You're
okay.
Welcome.
Thank you for the call. Let's go on. Here we have somebody in Danville to talk with next. Line number 4. Hello.
Hello. My name is Nancy.
Mm-hmm.
I have a child that has hypopituitarism.
Okay.
We have doctored in Danville all our lives. If I had listened to the local doctors and not seeked out better help for my child, I'm sure we would have major problems right now.
Okay. But Tell me, can you relate what's different about your child?
At about 15 months, she quit growing.
She just quit growing, right.
The doctors would not listen to me. They just said, well, you know, you have 4 children. They're all different. Give her time. Give her time.
But she just absolutely quit growing.
Yeah, she quit growing.
Yeah, and she looked a little chubby and kind of kept her baby fat look?
No, she looked almost normal, yeah.
Okay.
All right, but, you know, with hypopituitarism, there is also the stress hormone that's not there.
Yeah.
And without the stress hormone, the child will die. So had I not completely kept after the physician and made them give me a referral to an endocrinologist, we would have had problems.
You're right. With hypopituitarism, what fails? Growth hormone fails, thyroid glands being told not to work, the adrenal cortical steroids are not working. These kids can be in major problems for multiple reasons.
Right. And now I have a normal 8-year-old. She's at the 50th percentile on the growth chart. Previously, she was not even on the growth chart.
Okay. Is she she's receiving steroids?
She's receiving all the
steroids. She's receiving thyroid hormone. She's getting growth hormone.
Right. And Cortef.
Yeah.
Replacement.
Yeah.
But the first thing I would recommend to any parent, if you have a doubt, I'm not sure doctors are the last words. And if you have a doubt, I would contact the Human Growth Foundation, or I would go see a pediatric endocrinologist.
Yeah.
And I do have an 800 number here for the Growth Hormone Foundation. If nothing else, you can get some literature. And maybe if you don't have a child with this problem, it will ease your mind as well. You can use it both ways.
Okay. What's the number, please?
The number is 1-800-451-6434.
Thank you.
All right. Very good. Thank you.
Okay.
And other questions, comments are certainly welcome. Our guest this morning, Dr. Robert Bocek. He is a pediatrician at Christie Clinic in Champaign, and every month he stops by here always on Thursday, and we talk about children's health. So this is a we hope that it's a resource for you. If you have questions, concerns, things, anything that you could discuss with a pediatrician, that's what we're here all about this morning. So you can call us 333-WILL or 9455, toll-free 800-222-WILL. It's still, I guess it sounds like to me that we're talking about, in a way, a little bit about two different sorts of situations. And I appreciate what the caller had to say, but to me, I guess I'd see a difference between a child that's not growing at all and a child that we might think is maybe small for their age, or we just think that they're not growing at maybe at the rate, or maybe it's has something to do with the place that they start, but that they are growing. And as time goes along, we can say, well, yes, there is progress. The child is growing. So I'm not exactly sure how you when I guess, again, the big question is, all right, when do you start to worry?
Yeah, and I think like the last caller pointed, or like we emphasized with the last caller, when they stop growing. During infancy, they'll grow, oh gosh, I can't remember. I think 4 to 6 inches in like the first, somewhere around 6 inches in the first year. And then they'll settle back to about 2 to 2.5 inches a year. And as long as they're putting that 2 to 2.5 inches a year on, you say endocrinologically and health-wise, they're probably doing okay. And child's growth is very sensitive to any type of insult. If the pituitary's not doing well, if the growth hormone's not being secreted right, or if there's a chronic disease like the kids with congenital heart disease won't grow well, kids with cystic fibrosis, nutritional disease won't grow well, kids who are being neglected or just not being fed won't grow well. So I think, again, regular health care visits to the doctor are important so we can follow the growth velocity, we call it. And as long as the growth velocity is fine, chances are the child's fine. They're just, for whatever reason, destined to be small. Mm. And like the previous caller said, some of these small kids, when they hit puberty, can really take off like a rocket and get to be normal or tall for age. So, and like the last caller said, sometimes we doctors make mistakes too, so if you really are concerned about your child,
Well, as always, second opinion is always fine. If you're concerned, to
go
see another doctor. Well, when do you think about supplementing hormones? We have heard stories of people actually abusing that, who for some reason had just decided that, maybe they've decided they want their kids to be basketball players, or, from whatever reason, or they're thinking that maybe their child is lagging behind and for whatever reason it's going to be a problem for him or her later. What really are the right circumstances under which to think about that?
Boy, that's a tough question because growth hormone, number one, these deficiencies are quite rare. They're real, but they're quite rare. And I think the other problem is determining growth hormone deficiency can be tough because you just can't grab a random blood test for growth hormone. You really need to stress them, and there's been a variety of stressors over the years. When I was in training, we used to use hypoglycemia. We'd give these kids insulin, make them hypoglycemic, and then resident or intern had to watch him, which is kind of a scary proposition as this child started to break out in sweats and got a little shaky and that sort of stuff, and then arginine. But it's still kind of a tough process. But, yeah, we do have growth hormone available for the growth hormone deficient, and it works pretty well. The other thing you mentioned is, gee, can we take the first caller, this child who's growing at the fifth percentile, who's in all likelihood very normal because of a normal growth velocity, and can we make them taller by giving them growth hormone? And the answer probably is no. The growth hormone doesn't work very well on the growth hormone-sufficient patient. If your growth hormone's normal and we give you growth hormone, we can probably make your growth velocity over the short period of time increase, but we probably can't affect the adult height at all that way. So there seems to be a, Mother Nature's pretty cagey and says, you're not going to mess with me. If I'm deficient, you can mess with me and it'll work. If I'm not deficient, you can't mess with me. There's been some work with Turner syndrome, and this is a genetic defect where the these are females. The Y chromosome doesn't appear, so they're X. They have one sex chromosome, or they may be mosaic. Part of their cells have one X, and part have two X. And these kids tend to be growth hormone, or they tend. There's been a lot of work done in giving. They don't tend to be growth hormone deficient. Measurement-wise, but there's been a lot of work given these girls growth hormone, and there's been, from what I recollect of the literature, there's been sort of a so-so response to it. It hasn't been a good response, but there is growth hormone for the true growth hormone deficient. It tends to work pretty well.
Okay. Well, again, other questions are welcome. 333-WILL, toll-free, 800-222-WILL. Just one item that now comes to mind that I know I've heard in the last couple of days, and I'm wondering what you have heard about this. Apparently there are some studies, and although it's not entirely clear, someone feels that breastfed babies have lower risk of being obese later in life, which I don't know, may or may not connect with the thing we were talking about, the fact that that also when you compare them to formula-fed babies, they don't put on weight as fast.
Yeah.
Do you think that there maybe is something to that? That might be another one of the benefits of breastfeeding. Maybe that's there'll be less chance that your child will be seriously overweight later in life.
Yeah, and I guess again, this data seems to be sort of good. Mm-hmm. And I guess my other question, and I think about all these nutritional studies. What's the control group and does this have to do with people who elect not to breastfeed? In my experience, tend to introduce solid foods sooner in a child's life, and there's been talk about that for years too. That the early introduction of solid foods increases the calories shoved into this kid, increases the growth, and does that have to do with obesity later on? So, yeah, is the breastfed family Is there some safeguard in the breast milk, or is it the nutritional attitude of this family in general, a little later introduction of solid foods and that sort of stuff, that they're just healthier eaters in general than the people who elect to not breastfeed bottle feed?
And I suppose there, again, it gets back to all of the sort of lifestyle issues that enter in that determines what kind of weight a person is going to have, mm-hmm. how they eat, what their activity level is, do they get regular exercise, mm-hmm. all sorts of things that really do enter into that, in addition to the genes you happen to be born yeah. with and whatever kind of starch your parents gave you. So maybe it's a little too complicated to sort out one thing yeah. and say, well, yes, just breastfeeding, we think that
Yeah, at the risk of losing my membership as a fellow in the American Academy of Pediatrics, for you women who have elected for whatever reason to bottle feed instead of breastfeed, or the breast milk didn't come in or something like that, are you condemning by bottle feeding, are you condemning your child to allergies? Are you condemning your child to obesity? Are you condemning your child to not being as bright as the breastfed baby? The answer, I will say, is no. So don't take that guilt trip on yourself. Formula is made to mimic breast milk as close as we can, and formula-fed babies, well, I think most of us here in the studio now were probably formula-fed babies because breastfeeding wasn't the thing to do at that time.
Right, sure.
Maybe we could have been brighter than we are, but I don't know. So, yeah, don't hang a guilt trip on yourself because you elected not to breastfeed, because the data isn't that good. There's probably advantages to breastfeeding, but bottle feeding's a pretty good second.
All right. I have a couple of other callers here. Champagne, next, line one.
Yes. Well, first of all, I wanted to thank you for that last comment. As a mother who has tried to breastfeed two children and couldn't and was brokenhearted, I appreciate finally someone saying, hey, it's okay.
It's okay. And your kids are, I'm sure, healthy, growing, and fine.
Oh, yes.
And doing well in school.
Oh, they are. Yes, they're
okay.
They're wonderful. My question, or not really a question, it's slightly off topic. There was this report about a month ago about SIDS, and where it doesn't matter whether the child's on the stomach or the back, or there wasn't. I mean, I just caught a quick news flash.
Oops. Okay.
I haven't heard any information since.
Okay. All the data I'm getting is that when we change the sleeping position from front tummy sleeping to back sleeping, is SIDS has been reduced by, oh, let's use the number 60%. It varies, but it's been substantially reduced. It varies depending on the study, but it's been substantially reduced. So we think that we've eliminated the kids who ended up rebreathing or basically suffocating, but I think nobody ever thought that SIDS was that there was one cause of SIDS. There's probably more than one, and we've certainly reduced it by 50 or 60% by changing. Well, we haven't reduced, yeah, by changing sleeping positions, we reduced it, but we've still got this other number out there that we can't reduce by changing sleeping positions. Something else is going on in these children that we don't understand. I think there are certain cases where the tummy sleeping position is still recommended, maybe for the kids with gastroesophageal reflux. They may do a little bit better on their tummy with their head up. But there are very few indications, maybe preemies. But I think in general, it's better for kids to sleep on their back than on their tummy. All data supports that.
Okay, so you'd still recommend that?
Absolutely.
Then I've heard both my children slept on their backs and they had flat heads.
Okay.
They're not brain damaged at all, but
no.
I've heard other people say, well, this child, you know, he slept on his back and he's got a flat head and that's why he's slow.
Yeah. No, the brain is very moldable. I bet you your kid's head shape is perfectly normal now, too.
Oh, yeah. They rounded out perfectly.
Yeah. And I think, apparently there's been an industry in football helmets for these kids with flat heads. Or you can go to doctors and get them put into these helmets that will keep their head round. And I think, in general, this flattening of the head, just keep changing their position. If the left side's getting flat, switch them head for foot, and it'll make them look the other way, and it'll make the other side flat, the right side flat, and left side will round out. And besides that, sooner or later, these kids are going to roll over.
Right.
And get off their heads, and they're going to mold nicely. And no, the brain gets flattened too, but the brain tends to be elastic that way and tolerates this flattening, and everything's cool.
Okay. Well, thank you.
You're welcome.
Right, thank you. And again, another caller here. This is Urbana, line two. Hello.
Hello. I have a question about a breathing problem my nephew has. When he was born, which was about maybe 16 months ago, he was born perfect, had a very easy birth, and then over the course of his first year started developing more and more serious breathing problems. On his very first birthday, he was hospitalized for breathing problems, and then since then has been in and out of the hospital, I think, every week with severe breathing problems. They say that he has childhood asthma. I think that it may be because he lives 10 blocks away from alloy steel, which recently was cited by the Illinois EPA for emissions. So my questions are, I have three questions, but let me just start with the first. What do you know about childhood asthma?
I'm confused, I guess. Okay. Childhood asthma is part hereditary. Not everybody can wheeze or have breathing problems. Some people, no matter what you do to them, won't wheeze. You can irritate the lungs any way you want, and you won't wheeze. But inheriting the ability to wheeze of and by itself doesn't do the job, because some people who can wheeze will never wheeze anyway. And I was just recently at a lecture where, about 50% of the population can't wheeze, won't wheeze. But certainly having the ability to wheeze doesn't mean you will wheeze. There seems to be some other triggers needed. Certainly pollution and smoke is a good trigger for breathing problems, for wheezing, for asthma.
I see. So is there any way in which doctors can check for particulate matter in a baby's lungs or are there ways to check for the particulate matter that may be irritating them in their environment?
That's not a doctor thing. That's an EPA sort of thing. Checking for particulate matter in lungs, yeah, we could do that, I suppose, but it'd take a lung biopsy, and I don't think we want to do that on this child.
Yeah.
You know, it would take an invasive procedure that I don't think we want to do, so I think, yeah, best we can do for this child is, yeah, and this company, yeah, they've been in our local paper, and, yeah, people are on them now, so they'll have to clean up.
But the situation is that it'll be years before they clean up,
yeah.
According to what I've seen. The baby's 1 year old, 1 year old, 16 months, and he's going to continue to be developing over time. I'm just wondering the extent to which doctors are able to advise patients about the effects of pollution, because I know we have one special case in Champaign right now, but I also know that there tends to be pollution-related illnesses. I've had some that are similar, or nutrition-related illnesses, and I'm wondering if the medical profession is starting to expand to look at those things, include those things, be able to advise on those things as well.
You know, we can, but gee, you know, I can tell this family move.
Well,
you know, get out of the pollution area, but just say, okay, you know, that's good advice, but can this family do it? And the answer may be no, or I can tell the family, get rid of your dog,
mm-hmm.
and they aren't going to do it. Stop smoking in the house, and they're going to tell me they didn't do it, but you know what, their nicotine, they've got a tobacco addiction problem, they're probably not going to do it. So we can give plenty of advice, but we can't, you know, but we can't, as a healthcare profession, control. We can tell you what we think would be best for your child, but we can't make you do it.
Mm-hmm.
Is this child cursed? You know, is this child likely to suffer permanent lung damage? No, we think not. If the situation can be controlled, the environment can be cleaned up. And then there's this genetic component, too, that we don't know what's going to go on with this child. You know, is this child's asthma going to clear up as he gets older? And we know that of the asthmatics, you know, 25 to 50% of them are going to stop having problems with it. So, you know, I guess, yeah, stay tuned. We don't know what's going to happen to your nephew.
And the 25 to 50% of patients with childhood asthma just kind of get over it? There's not any particular remedy that doctors put them through to help them get through?
No. Well, yes. I think that, you know, acutely now he should be on, and he's how old, 15 months?
He's 16 months.
16 months.
He's on steroids that actually the doctors say will stunt his growth early on, and then later on he will get off of those steroids.
Okay. He's on steroids how? Through a nebulizer?
When he's in the hospital, he's on steroids through an IV and nebulizer.
Okay.
And
short-term
food. But
yeah.
Usually just through the nebulizer.
Yeah, short-term steroids like that IV probably will not affect his growth to any significant extent. And and as far as the nebulized steroids, they won't affect – now the data we have show that they won't affect his long-term growth. And I think the nebulized steroids are relatively recent out, and they're going to be a blessing.
Okay. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Okay, thank you. We've got about 10 minutes left in this part of Focus 580. Our guest is Dr. Robert Bocek. He's a pediatrician from Christie Clinic, and he is with us every month on a Thursday. We talk about children's health. So if you have something that's on your mind, you can give us a call, 333-9455 for Champaign-Urbana. Toll free, 800-222-9455. We have a couple of other Champaign callers here. The next in line is number one, line number one. Hello.
Hi. I got a question. I have a 12-year-old daughter who really enjoys doing a lot of dance classes and things like this. And if she had her druthers every day after school, every weekend day, she would have a dance class. And I'm sort of thinking everybody needs some downtime, some unstructured time, some time off. And she keeps saying, no, 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 the more the merrier. And I'm sort of torn because, you know, her grades are fine in school. She does several dance classes, but
and socially she's fine. She has friends and
oh yeah, she has
enjoys
dance classes. She has friends at school. She, you know, knock on wood, it's wonderful. But, you know, I sort of feel like everybody's got to have some unstructured, I mean, especially children, downtime. And I'm not sure what to think.
You know, I guess one of the things I was going to talk about if it was slow today is, gee, I've done some camp physicals on kids that, you know, their summer is so packed full of this camp, that camp, and this, you know, constantly
and
in motion. And
summer.
Yeah, and it worries me. But, you know, I guess what I would tell you is she's doing fine. If her grades are fine. Socially, she's fine. She gets out. You know, she seems perfectly happy and just enjoys this dance so much that she wants more and more and more. I think it's at this point in her life, it's okay. And I think what's going to happen, she's 12 years old now. I think as she gets into adolescence, she's going to discover something else or she'll probably back down from it. And I think you're doing great. I think you have concerns. You're keeping an eye on her. And when she says, I want out, that's the time. Or maybe I'm going to see her, maybe we'll see her sometime on the stage in the ballet or something like that too. Maybe, you know, maybe she's just, yeah, that's what's going to happen and she's just going to enjoy it all her life. But I suspect what's going to happen is during her teenage years, she's going to say, you know, it was fun while it lasted and I think my interest is beginning to flag a bit. But I think as long as everything else seems fine about her, it's fine for her to spend that much time at dance.
So just wait for her to give an indication that She wants out.
Yeah. Soccer's more interesting or something like that.
Yeah. Okay. Well, thanks.
You're
All
welcome.
Right. Thank you. And to Champagne for someone else. Line three. Hello.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to offer a word of encouragement to the previous caller who was concerned about her nephew. I've been reading in the local paper about the situation with Alloy also, and, you know, I certainly don't know much about it, but I've lived in this community a long time, and I've raised two children here, and I remember very, very clearly when it used to be legal in Champaign to burn leaves in the autumn, and there were all kinds of kids who would have all kinds of problems with asthma when that occurred. My son had a good friend who every time their neighbor burned leaves, the poor child ended up in the hospital. And our pediatrician was pretty active in talking about this issue in the community, and now you can't do that anymore.
Yeah.
So there is action that you can take, and pediatricians actually can be spokespeople for you know, what would be healthy for children, and so it's not impossible.
Yeah.
Okay, just wanted to encourage her.
Thank you. Unfortunately, outside of the cities, you can still burn leaves. And I'm with you. I hated being on call weekends, nice weekends in the fall, because the leaf burning was going to start and the asthmatics were going to wheeze. And unfortunately, in a lot of communities around here, you can still burn leaves. And unfortunately, the wind still blows that smoke into Champaign-Urbana, and that tends to be a powerful irritant for people with a respiratory, either kids with asthma or adults with asthma or adults with chronic obstructive pulmonary disease. And so, yeah, and I think we've talked about it on this show, too.
Don't burn
your leaves. Yeah. Grind them up and use them for mulch. It's good for the garden, and it's good for people's lungs.
Okay. We've got about 5 minutes left. If someone wants to call real quick, we can get him in. I wanted to go back just for a second. I'm sure this is also something we've talked about, again, to the breastfeeding issue, because in recent years now, we're really now encouraging moms to breastfeed for a variety of reasons. And we all know, as one of the callers said, that there are also some reasons that some women find it very difficult, uncomfortable. They just can't do it. And to them, we want to say, well, that's okay. There's nothing wrong with formula. An awful lot of babies were raised on formula. One of the things that we think, I guess, is a benefit of breastfeeding is that there are some things in the breast milk that confer immunity and health benefits on the baby. And I guess my question would be is if you wanted to get that stuff into the baby, how long would you have to breastfeed? Say if you were only going to do it for a little while, would there be a point to do that if you could just do it for a couple of weeks or a couple of months and then go on to formula?
Yeah, you know, here again, I guess I'm confused by some of the data, and a lot of it from breast milk seems to be that the advantage of breastfeeding wanes quickly when breastfeeding stopped. So I guess as far as, let's talk about the immune properties of breast milk. Probably if you breastfeed for the first 2 months, because that's when we worry most. That's when the baby seems to be immunologically most fragile, most susceptible to serious infections. And so if I had to pick a number, I'd say breastfeed for the first 2 months. But you know what I've just done? If you breastfeed for 2 months, that baby's a breastfed baby, and you're going to have... Let me just stop there before I get into trouble. But yeah, I think if you breastfeed for 2 months, you're going to breastfeed longer than that, probably.
Okay. So does that really mean that you have to make a decision at the beginning? Either you're going to
probably every day you breastfeed is advent. From what the data that currently exists, every day you breastfeed is an advantage to the baby.
Okay. One other thing we said we thought we might just mention. As if we haven't nagged people on this in the past, it's certainly summer. Kids, if pretty soon I'm sure going to be out of school. I think they're still in school now, but pretty soon be out of school. And I guess we want to say when they're on rollerblades, when they're skateboarding, when they're riding their bikes,
scooters now,
any form of mobile transportation like that, we'd really like to see them wearing helmets and maybe some other kinds of protection, but
helmets,
certainly helmets.
Number one, and the other protection is a good idea, but certainly helmets. I think the other thing with everybody taking driving vacations coming up now, there's a lot of data coming out that kids should be in some kind of child seat until 80 or 90 pounds now. Booster seat of some kind to put the seat belt and the shoulder belt into a more appropriate protective position instead of wrapping around the child's neck or the seatbelt slipping up over the abdomen and damaging the softer abdominal organs. Certainly sunscreens you've heard about frequently, and trampolines are probably
Has the Academy actually taken a position on that?
Yes, they have.
They said, please, let's get rid of those things.
Yeah. And I think, can we make our world entirely safe for kids? You know, any play apparatus over 4 feet tall is a hazard. So, yeah, I guess kids would be safer if we took every slide and swing out of the playground, too. And I'm not sure we want to say that because these things are good. But I think, yeah, kids need to be supervised from an early age and taught sort of the rules of the road of the swing set, if you will, or the rules of the road of the slide. And hopefully we can't keep our kids perfectly safe, but hopefully with good adult supervision and limits early on and rules of the playground, we can minimize injuries in children.
Okay. Well, thanks very much.
Thank you.
Dr. Robert Bocek, he's a pediatrician from Krista Clinic. He's with us each month, always on a Thursday, for these regular programs.